This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So this is crazy. I can't believe I'm this excited for this, Peter, because like how old are you?
I'm 32.
You're 32 and you said you're new to all of this.
Yeah. I just started listening to your podcast probably a couple weeks ago. I think I first came in to maybe the original Batman review episode. It was around the time where he put out a Batman review and like a Kaleidoscape demo.
Oh, okay.
And I think I'd been following because I wasn't able to get out and see Batman in theaters. And so whenever it was coming out on HBO, which I have, I was like, oh, great, I'll be able to watch it. And, you know, obviously with a dog and a baby and it's a 3 hour long movie, I'm like, I don't want to just watch it in like 40 minute chunks at a time. I want to try and find a time where I can watch it all together.
Oh yeah.
I think there were no spoilers or anything. So I just started, I think maybe I found it on Twitter. I found you on Twitter, just by way of following the movie or seeing associated tweets or retweets or something like that. And I'd never heard of Kaleidoscape and I was just curious, because the movie came out and it was $20 or I could watch it on HBO. And I think part of the conversation that was interesting to me was like, oh, like the difference between watching in Dolby Vision on HBO versus buying it from iTunes versus the Blu-ray and whenever that came out, and then Kaleidoscape, which I'd never heard of. So all of that just really got me interested to kind of listening. And I had already been collecting a ton of movies on iTunes that a lot of them have been upgraded to Dolby Vision mm-hmm. and 4K and stuff. And so notwithstanding too that during COVID, I've been listening to, or sorry, watching a lot more movies and listening to a lot of podcasts. And I don't know, just kind of your show and the Twitter feed and all the other home theater stuff just kind of hit me at a certain point where I was looking for something new to listen to and it really piqued my interest. So that's kind of how I found my way over here.
Wow. That's it's like that one. It sounds funny when you put it that way, like the difference between, you know, the disc, the Kaleidoscape, the streaming, the iTunes, the HBO, and you're like, and all of that.
It
is quite a bit when you think of it that way. When you break it down like that, I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah, but also too, like I remember again hearing one of the first episodes I listened to, and you're talking to another guest, and you know you're talking about flipping, you know, channel flipping and finding a movie on TV, and then deciding to go down to your theater and watch it there, so you could watch it like in full, the best way possible, and that's kind of, you know, similar to again, you know, growing up in the '90s, I was constantly channel flipping, finding my way halfway through Die Hard or Air Force One or Enemy of the State or something like that, and just like kind of watching two or three movies at a time, just like flip whenever it's commercials, I flip over to the other movie or something like that.
Yeah.
And now I've got Fubo, so that's how I do my cable through Fubo.
Same
TV,
here. Yep.
Which is great. And they get some good 4K sports stuff.
Yes.
4K football, which is great. But they have obviously AMC and Paramount and all these like movie channels. And so I do the same thing. I'm like, that was the thing I never got from other, cord cutting measures, is like being able to flip through and find movies. And, I would do the same thing. I'd be like halfway through, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or something like that, which is a movie that I own on iTunes and it's in 4K. And it's like, okay, this is a great movie. And I'm like right when Cliff is getting to the ranch. I need to stop it right now and just go over and just watch the rest of the movie from iTunes, cause it's going to look so much better. There are just like a few instances like that I heard you talking about with other guests that was like, oh, that's, I don't have a home theater, but I've done that in my own way. So that was just another kind of interesting thing that resonated with me.
That is pretty interesting, though. that is something that I haven't even touched on my podcast, is that going from, I guess I touched on it briefly, going from HBO Max to the iTunes, mm-hmm. but going yeah. from a cable service or a Fubo,
right.
it's yeah. so much less quality.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. And even like the difference, I mean, HBO or Netflix or whatever, like looks incredible, looks like a Blu-ray disc probably compared to what you would get on right. Fubo or whatever. And again, that's like, you can swap between channels, you know, seamlessly and super quick. You can do four channels in one screen. So like, obviously they need to make some sacrifices to just be as fast as possible and have all the picture in picture and all that stuff. I totally get it.
Right.
But yeah, that's really, again, for me, because I don't have Kaleidoscape or anything like that. I'm just going between HBO and, you know, 4K on iTunes or something like that. I have an Xbox, but I don't have any Blu-rays or anything like that. I've got a bunch of DVDs, but so that's really where I noticed it the most, obviously, is coming from watching a movie on Fubo versus like something like iTunes, just because that's what I'm using most frequently.
Right. Right, exactly. And that is a great point, though. Like you said, going from like a Fubo to an iTunes, it is like going to a Blu-ray. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not equal to a Blu-ray, but that jump sure. is pretty the jump substantial. Is
similar.
And sure. it's that's something that I used to do back when I had, like in the 90s, I'd have cable. And then I looked into Dish Television or DirecTV, mm-hmm. and I ended up going with Dish. But one of the reasons I did it was because the quality was so much better, the picture quality. And back then it was, you're looking 480 max, you know?
Right.
And nowadays it's even that much better. When we cut the cord here, we saved, I was paying over $200 a month for Dish in mm-hmm. all of my channels. So right. I dropped that. I went to Fubo and the other streaming services I had already had, like a Netflix or a Disney Plus.
Right.
So you're already paying for that anyways, right? Well, mm-hmm. my wife hated the transition, because when you're on a cable box or a Dish network or something, you have numbers. Mm-hmm. You want to go to a channel, right. you can go to 741, right? And you mm-hmm. can jump instantly. Whereas Fubo and all the other streaming, like any of the streamers, you have to scroll. It's all based on right. your, you know, like the Apple, you know, remote or the Fire, sure. the Amazon remote or whatever,
yeah.
or Roku. So you're scrolling. But my wife hated that, hated it. It's like the first day I put it on, and that's what's great about the streaming is it's all just trial. Right? You got seven days for free to try it out. So I'm like, let's try it. We still had Dish. And I'm like, she's like, I hate it. And I'm like, but the quality right. in picture and sound going from Dish to streaming was a big jump. It was huge. And I was like, this is amazing. I went downstairs, watched it in my theater. I watched it on my other TVs. I'm running around the house excited. I'm like, I'm right. saving like $130 a month.
Yeah.
And I'm getting better quality. I told my wife, she's like, when she was upstairs in bed watching TV, and I'd been running around the house for like 2 hours checking mm-hmm. everything, right? And I'm like, isn't this amazing? And she just looks at me with these eyes and goes, I hate it. I was like, well, you gotta try it, because I'm like, the quality I'm getting and the improvement in quality, I go, I would pay another $130 a month right. for this.
And I'm saving. You know, exactly. And you don't need to rent your cable boxes and yep. pay monthly or annually for that. And I totally agree with you. And also, too, if you don't like it, cancel it and go and try Sling or go and try whatever, DirecTV Now or whatever all the other competitors are to that,
yeah,
or YouTube TV.
Yeah.
YouTube TV, I think, was one of the first ones I tried. And I really liked it because I spent a weekend at one of my friend's houses using it. I was like, oh, this is great. And whenever you switch back, the big thing for me was whenever you switch back to from one channel to another, it was already kind of DVRing it. So you could rewind, like if you're watching two movies at the same time, you could right. rewind it back and do that. you can't really do that on Fubo unless you do two screens like simultaneously and have them like split screen, which I do often. Again, if I'm like watching a game and a movie or something at the same time, I can pause the movie, let the commercials all kind of buffer through. And then whenever it's halftime or intermission or whatever, I can go back and you know, skip the commercials and all that kind of stuff. So that those are just like nuances that you kind of figure out with each service. But yeah, it's really great. So it's just one of those things you have to get used to it. And, you know, my wife is the same way. But it's like once you start using it and you play around with it, you know, she loves it.
It took her a week.
It just takes time.
Yeah. It took her about a week and she was like, no, this is fine. Once she found the on Fubo, you have to. She likes to use the guide. I don't like the guide. I like to be in, you know, at on the what they call home.
Right.
And then you just, push up,
swipe
up, and you can swipe through while you're watching a show. You can swipe through all your channels at the bottom. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And you set your favorites and all that. That like negates the whole need for knowing that, okay, channel 829 is the sports network where I can watch the baseball game or the hockey game or whatever.
Right.
And so I'll favorite, you know, all of the channel, whatever, the Red Zone or NFL or ESPN or Paramount or AMC, whatever, all of the channels that I watch regularly, I just like, they're all pinned there. So
yeah, they're favorited. Can,
like, swipe through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it's not, and if it's not favorited, then Fubo will recommend it to me and I'll scroll down and it'll show me something that I didn't know was there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a new thing on Fubo now is like when you turn it, when you turn your television on, it actually puts something at the front that they know that you're going to want to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
exactly.
Is pretty cool. Like if you come home on a Sunday afternoon, I'll have like, boom, right there, the Patriots will be ready. Whatever channel they're on. And typically my, I have CBS as the first channel. That was channel 4 in Boston. So I would have that as, that's my favorite number one. And then channel 5 would be number 2 in Boston and so forth. Right. So if they were on Fox, I'd have to scroll all the way to Fox, which is a few down, but now it's right there at the front. They move it right because they know that you're going to want to watch that. And they same with any of my wife's favorite shows or, Celtics games, Bruins games, Red Sox games, they're right there. And if you don't want it, you just keep on scrolling. Right. And it's, it's pretty cool how they're, trying to keep us, on board really. Right.
So for sure. Yeah. And the more, and they're starting to do more stuff too with like, you know, they have like sports widgets and things like that that you can put on there. I haven't used them too much. But I'm sure like when it, by the time football season rolls around, I'm sure they'll get a little more sophisticated and make that more useful. But yeah, I mean, and bring, and again, I think the key for Fubo, at least probably why I, and, probably a lot of people came on was, 4K sports. I mean, it wasn't a lot. It's not, it's maybe, you know, 3 or 4 games a month or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'll watch a random, like, you know, Yankees, you know, Red Sox game or whatever, because it's on 4K, it's in 4K or something on Fubo. Right. And it's like, I wouldn't have any reason to watch it otherwise, but like, I want to just to like, see what it looks like. And
that's funny.
I think they did the game out in the cornfield, the Field of Dreams game. I think they did that in 4K too. So I watched some of that, which was great. So yeah, it's just like, and again, it's just like getting you to watch because it's in 4K and it's sports and that's something that you don't see a ton of, aside from, you know, a few games here and there for football.
Yeah. It's funny. You say, to a guy lives in Massachusetts, a random Red Sox Yankees
random Red Sox Yankees game. Yeah.
And dude, I live there's in New York, no such so thing.
I live in New York. So Yankees, is really serious around here, obviously, but I'm from Pittsburgh originally. So I'm a Pirates fan.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. So,
Nesson just recently went to 4K with HDR, which is the home cable provider for Red Sox and Boston Bruins
in Boston. So they're broadcasting hockey in 4K?
In 4K, yeah, when it starts back up. I think they started it right after the B season ended, or it might have been right before. I didn't really notice much of a difference there.
Okay.
But what was interesting is they were saying, like, if you can get, you know, Nesson was advertising it like crazy, you can get this in 4K. But one of the first and only places was Fubo. because and I got the notification from Fubo, like, you're getting Nessun now in 4K with HDR. And I was like,
wow, that's great.
Yeah. And they were the lead. That's one of the reason I chose them. I came on board like 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago. And they were the leader in 4K television because they did so much sports. And like you said, a lot of it was like soccer from overseas.
Sure.
And yeah, because they've been doing 4K for a long time.
Forever. Yeah. They were, you know, certainly in the space of, YouTube TV and Fubo and Sling and all these guys, like they're absolutely the pioneers, mostly in general, but also just sports, tons of sports in 4K.
Yeah. Yeah. And getting back to that, the quality, it's even just going from like a cable television to streaming. Now streaming is getting so good. And then, like you said, just watching your television or your movies, like we said, those are like the trailers. And then you're going to iTunes. The iTunes is getting really, really good. It's
It's great.
It's the sound is getting even better. It's not there yet. But you can have, and I don't know if you've gone far enough back, but I've been recommending to people when you're just starting out, build an iTunes library, start with streaming because who knows where physical is going to go. And until you have a physical collection, you don't know the difference. And it's getting so close that when you AB it, you could see the difference. But if you're not doing it immediately, it's very hard to tell.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, definitely. And that was, again, like based on the time that I was kind of growing up and when I was in high school, I remember, I think probably the first like movie I bought on iTunes, I think was this Jack Johnson concert film, which wasn't even, they didn't have movies then. So I had the DVD, but when I bought it on iTunes, it was split into like 20 music videos because they didn't have movies, weren't a thing on iTunes. So it was like I had the whole movie, but it was split into, you know, music videos. So that's how I did that. But whenever I went to college and everything like that, I was buying, you know, DVD, Blu-rays were coming out around then, or they're becoming more popular. But I didn't have like a TV and a Blu-ray player. I had a DVD, or I had a PS2 and whatever. So that was my DVD player.
Yep.
And I was just buying DVDs from eBay, from Amazon for like $1 or $2 a piece and just like buying a bunch of them at a time. I would go to, there's a record store. I went to school in Syracuse and there's a great record store there, Soundgarden, that not only sells records and CDs, but also had, you know, box sets of TV shows and DVDs of movies. And it was like buy 3 for $10 or something like that. So I still have a big binder full of DVDs, but whenever it came time that, Blu-ray was becoming more prevalent, because of the equipment I have, but I was like, I'm not going to go and like rebuy everything in Blu-ray now. iTunes was starting to come in more and it was like, I could buy these movies on iTunes. I think probably one of the first couple of things I bought were like the Dark Knight bundle or something like that. So it's like buy the 3 Dark Knight movies, buy the Godfather bundle for like $15 or something like that or whatever. And that, and I was kind of off. And same thing, like bought the Mission Impossible bundle, the Stanley Kubrick bundle. It was like 7 movies for $40 or something like that. So that's kind of how it got me hooked in, because I was like, well, now I'm growing my library in iTunes. I have an Apple TV. I've got, you know, iPhone, iPad, all that stuff. I might as well just kind of buy my movie library there instead of buying discs, because also too, I'm living in New York. I'm in an apartment. I'm not like, I don't have tons and tons of space for physical stuff.
Yeah.
And then eventually, obviously it got to a point where, they started upgrading everything to 4K or to Dolby Vision or whatever for free. And that just kind of keeps you hooked in even longer, because you're like, all of this old stuff that I bought, you know, 5-10 years ago is all now being, whenever they re-release Citizen Kane in 4K HDR disc or whatever, they're also updating it in iTunes and they're upgrading it for free. So it's like, why wouldn't I want to invest in stuff like that and buy whenever it's like $5 movies or whatever, just loading up on stuff that that I loved. So that's really what's been great for me, at least building like an iTunes library. Assuming that Apple and iTunes sticks around for a while, I think they probably will, but you know, you never know. Any sort of medium or thing that you buy. That's why I obviously know physical is still rings true for a lot of people, because the physical disc is always going to be in your possession. And
right.
I hear some things about people who like buy movies on iTunes and then it goes away or gets revoked, and the contract stipulates that they could do that.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened to me, and probably with like a lot of mainstream stuff that probably wouldn't really happen. But you never know.
Yeah. I mean, you always run that risk, but see, here's the thing, what I'll say about physical media, having been through many iterations, it's no different. Like say iTunes went away, right?
Right.
And you're like, I lost my entire library.
Right. Well,
that's no different than them coming out with a new format in physical media that's superior.
That's better, and it makes you want to upgrade and buy it for the fifth time again.
So exactly. Yeah. It's like, I don't even, I haven't counted, so let's do it. VHS, Laserdisc, DVD, Blu-ray, 4K, and now I'm on to Kaleidoscape, which is six. Right.
Yep.
Six iterations. Luckily, I didn't do the iTunes. I have a bunch in iTunes because I'll buy some.
Right.
And I always have, like, you know, when I would buy them is when I'd buy them early because they come out early there. And like, say, like, I remember doing it for Captain America, Winter Soldier. I could not wait for that movie to come out on at home. Right.
Yep.
And it would come out like 2 to 3 weeks before the physical disc. So the day that came out, I bought it and I watched it in my room and I would just watch it over and over. And then when the disc came out, I'd have a good working knowledge of what that looked like. And now, and this was all before I had a podcast. I just did this for fun. Now I actually, I have a purpose. I can actually do that and then tell people about it. And apparently people want to listen. So, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, so you, in my opinion, you really can't be afraid to lose your stuff. You can't, you can't go into something going, this is a forever. Now, yes. Do I still have my laser discs? Yeah. And if I ever wanted to go back and watch them, but compared to what we have now, I mean, some people would say the audio quality on those are better on a lot of them than some of the, even the 4K discs. That's an opinion thing. I still have it. I could still physically sit down and watch it.
Right. But
for all intents and purposes, I could still physically sit down and watch it on Fubo too.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's come up with me actually a couple of times where, we were trying to decide like what movie to watch, and I forget how or why, but we stumbled on Superbad, and for whatever reason, I didn't own it on iTunes. It wasn't on Netflix anymore or something like that. So it was like, you had to buy it. And I'm like, well, wait, I have the DVD in my binder, you know, with all my other old DVDs or whatever. And I've got my Xbox and I can just pop it in there and we'll watch it on disc. And it's like, that's totally fine. And also too, another thing that is coming up a lot more in iTunes, I think, which is part of the value proposition, I'm sure. But also with all the old DVDs are the commentary tracks, the extras, the behind the scenes stuff that, again, if you want to go and spend like $50 on the steelbook for the Batman or something like that and get all of that extra stuff, there's a ton of commentary on the iTunes version of that too. But again, that's like another piece that you don't always get when you're buying it from, even if you're buying it from iTunes, and certainly not if you're watching it on Netflix or HBO, is getting director commentaries, which are all things that I really like. For example, I was listening to, there's another great movie podcast I listened to called The Rewatchables, that's on the Ringer network. And there's a great episode where they're rewatching JFK.
Oh.
And they're talking about some deleted scenes, and different things like that. And if you're, again, if you buy it on iTunes, you're not getting any of that. But I have the disc, the DVD. So I popped it in and I was able to watch all these deleted scenes that they're talking about and really, you know, again, engage with the podcast a way a little more than I would have if I didn't have the disc. So all that stuff is still, I think that there's still something there. And again, to your point, whether something new and better than Dolby Vision or Dolby Atmos comes out, who knows? I would probably see something more akin to Kaleidoscape deciding that they're going to have a subscription service where you can watch anything you want and pay,
right,
you know, $200 bucks a month or something like that. I don't know, whatever the price would be, but
right,
you know, you never know. That could always happen.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. I mean, the thing with Kaleidoscape, which scares people, is like if they were to go away, well, that's scary because you invest a lot of money to get the system up and running. And that's
right.
But again, it's, I mean, I've broken it down in the past. It's like what I've spent on my Laserdisc collection, right?
Right.
It's pretty close to what, by the end of the day, especially when you factor in, not inflation. That's a bad word to say nowadays, but I mean, you factor in like what it cost back then compared to now. So like if I spent $1,000 on a Laserdisc player back in 1993, what's that equal to now? It's a few thousand dollars. Right. And then each disc was like 40 or 50 bucks and you're just building your library there. And it was, I mean, it's a lot of money. And back then, what I was making, I was working in a factory, working out, you know, and I'm like, I wasn't making what I make now. And you're like,
right.
So, but I was still dumb enough or crazy enough that be like, there goes my budget, there goes my money. And it's like, I always allocated for that. So what's funny, I like what you said there. It's like, oh, are we going to get better than Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos? Well, when we had Laserdisc, we're like, what could be better than this?
You can't
even imagine, and that's the problem.
It's all whatever format the studios are going to create to put into movie theaters and to, you know, any other way that they could sort of repackage it every 10 years to take advantage of technology and streaming bandwidth and whatever. You know, they'll come up with something, I have no doubt.
Yeah, it's getting tougher though because we're getting to the limits of what we can see and hear.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. You know, like 4K, it's like we talk about it all the time, that we're past what we can actually perceive as an improvement. Sure. So what more can they add here? You know, it's
Picture-wise. Exactly. It gets to like a, you know, it's just science. What your eyes and ears can perceive. There's no doubt about that. I'm sure there's got to be doesn't stop them from selling 8K TVs, but
eight's got to be better than four, right?
yeah, exactly. You got to double everything every couple of years. But even if Kaleidoscape did cease to exist, you have everything downloaded locally, right? So maybe the store wouldn't exist, but would your system still work? I guess until it didn't anymore.
Yeah.
But like all of the files, let's say your Kaleidoscape system broke, but you still have all the movies downloaded. Mm-hmm. Can you watch them in some other way or no?
Oh yeah. I tested the system. One of the first things I did is I disconnected my internet from the street. Like you still have to have your network in your house running because that's how it communicates.
Right.
Okay.
I
mean, there's one HDMI cable. It goes from the actual, what they call the player. Right. And then that goes into the receiver. But all the other, like the actual hard drive sends all the information to the player through your network. Okay.
Right.
So you have to have your network running in your home, but you disconnect from the street. Still runs fine. And you wouldn't get any updates. You wouldn't get anything like that. But for all intents and purposes, it is similar to physical media. As long as, you know, if a hard drive, say Kaleidoscape literally just fell off the planet and they ceased to exist. Well, I would, like you said, I would have everything that I have. It would play fine. But if a hard drive failed, well, now that's proprietary.
Then you're in
trouble.
Can't
just go buy a hard drive. And that's an issue. So,
right.
But just like anything else, it's like you got to rebound and move on to something else.
Your house could flood and all of the Blu-rays and stuff like that in your basement could get destroyed,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly. It's, yeah. I speaking of which, with the Zapedi, I have like 600 movies on that thing on a hard drive on a NAS, right?
Right.
And I'm talking with Joe, my IT guy, he's been on the show. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you got to find a way to back those things up to a cloud so that if you don't lose that. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't. And I remember the first conversation I had with him and he's like, well, how big is it and how much would it cost? And I'm like, he goes, what are you talking? How many, you know, gigabytes to a movie?
How many movies could you possibly have? Yeah.
Right. And he goes, how big could that be? And then I told him and I'm like, these are like 80 gigabyte files. Like an entire, he goes, oh my God. You know, I'm like, yeah, we're talking terabytes.
I've got like 5 terabytes. I've got like 5 terabytes. Yeah, and he's like,
to back this up to the cloud, it would be hundreds of dollars a month.
Oh, yeah, it's not worth it.
No, and I'm like,
just like buy a Dropbox subscription and, you know, back it up or something.
And he goes, well, what you could do is you mirror it and then you take that hard drive and you put it off site. Like you drop it at your, and then you just have a mirrored hard drive. You have a mirrored versions of these things, which is possible. But I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm like, if my house burns down, I got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I'm like,
right.
But that's one of the nice things about the Kaleidoscape is if my house burns down, I still own all those movies. I just get a new system and I just upload all those movies. So that's even an advantage over like if your house burns down and all your physical media melted away, you have to repurchase all that.
Yeah.
With this, you don't. So there's pros and cons and I don't do any of these things because of those, you know,
right.
None of it is like, I don't say, well, hun, the reason we're buying all of this, right, is if this place burns to the ground, my movies are safe.
It's an investment in our future.
Right.
Yeah.
In our future entertainment. There you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you do it for the love of the hobby, really. It's like, I mean,
yep, right. Yeah.
I'll be at dinner and my wife will be like, I gotta go use the bathroom. I'll go on my iPhone. Boom, boom, boom. Buy a movie. There you go. All right. That'll be there. I don't know if I'll watch it or not, but I just bought a movie.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Fun. Yeah. I mean, that's
you can do that on iTunes too. Like,
exactly. It's like every, you know, Tuesday and like Friday, it's like they'll have a different slate of movies that are like $5 or something like that. So it's, again, it's a movie that I might have the DVD from, but it's in 4K and it's Dolby Vision and I can buy it for $5. So, or like, you know, the Untouchables, I think just got put out in 4K and that's like $7 or something like that, you know, incredible movie. I've gotten the DVD, but it's like, I can get it better and have it, you know, have it forever. So that's,
Have you done any of the, it's been a while, but I'm pretty sure you can have it on iTunes if you buy it and it has the digital code.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
You can, they do a service. I think I may have done that once or twice. I think they do it through like Movies Anywhere, which is another app, that you can kind of aggregate all your movies, which I have used before, but they don't have every single studio signed on. So if I've got like X number of movies purchased in iTunes, maybe only like 60% of them or 65% of them are shown up in Movies Anywhere because not every studio is in there. But yeah, it's like you basically buy it and inside of the case, there's a code to redeem through Movies Anywhere or through some other service. And then it'll show up in there. And I think it'll also show up in iTunes. I think you redeem it in iTunes and it'll also be in Movies Anywhere. So again, that's like another great kind of tie-in that ultimately makes sense. And for the studios, it's like, why wouldn't we want someone to have a digital version of it and then show them all of this other great stuff that's on Movies Anywhere or on iTunes, get them buying more movies. That's another great kind of tie-in they do.
Yeah. I haven't looked on I have the steel box set of the Batman. And I haven't looked at the extras on it yet, but I know there was talk and it was before the physical disc came out, but on iTunes, they actually have the audio commentary on iTunes.
Yeah, they do.
Matt Reeves audio. And I listened to it and have you listened to that one yet?
I haven't actually yet. I was talking about wanting to watch the Batman, and I tried, I watched it on HBO, and I was trying to watch it like late at night. And I think I watched like the first like 35 minutes and I fell asleep just cause it was late. I'd been up all night, and I was just like, all right, I'll come back and try this again. But then whenever I try it again, I'm like, okay, well, I want to start it from the beginning and I want to like try and make it through the whole thing. And it's 3 hours. But finally last night, I got around to watching it. And again, that was one of the things where it had been like 20, I think it was $25 when it first came out on iTunes. Then it just went on sale for like $12.99, I think. And so bought it on iTunes. Yeah. So I just bought it on iTunes. I watched it. I finally watched it for the first time all the way through last night. But inside, another one that I bought that was $5, Alien in 4K HDR. Because again, yeah. I bought that one already on iTunes. That's an example for whatever reason. I'd bought that one on iTunes, and whenever they upgraded it to 4K HDR, they didn't upgrade my copy, but it was there again for $5. So I just, again, I'm still buying it again, but that one I see a little more infrequently. But they do have the commentary.
Yeah, I see you messing with your TV there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There you go. So
cool.
They have everything there, and they've got all the extras, and you know, it looks like all deleted scenes commentary.
Yep.
You know, looks like a solid like 2 hours worth of stuff plus the director's commentary. So, you know, again, that's all stuff that's really great.
Yeah. I heard it was exclusive though. I heard that director's commentary was supposedly exclusive, and I should
exclusive to iTunes versus the disc.
Yeah, but when I heard that, it was before the disc came out, and people were getting upset. People were like,
sure.
Why would they do this? To make money? To get you to buy both?
Also, too, I don't know why Matt Reeves would have different to say through 2 3-hour-long commentaries.
I could give you one. I
can't imagine that they do that more than once.
Right, but no, he did. Did you see the, there's a YouTube video put out by Dolby. And there are two features, and one's on the sound and one's on the picture.
Oh, okay.
So as a director, if it was within himself to sit down and comment twice, he could he could literally go through the whole thing and talk all just about the picture and then an audio commentary on the audio.
True. And
would that not be interesting?
It'd
be amazing.
Definitely. I saw those on iTunes. I think I bookmarked them to watch later. I wanted to wait until I actually watched the movie before I watch any of the Dolby commentaries, but that's interesting. I'll have to look at that. Maybe it is an exclusive. I'll have to watch it and see whether he's leaning into one thing more over the other. All the commentary stuff is so fun, especially like right after you watch a movie, even if you can't rewatch watch 6 hours, watch the movie back to back, really. All that stuff is great. I mean, any of the, one of my favorites is the Gone Girl commentary with David Fincher. I'm not sure if you've watched that one, but, all of his commentaries are incredible.
Yeah.
And he does one with, for Chinatown as well. On the Chinatown iTunes, David Fincher does a commentary track with the writer. I think it's Robert Towne who wrote I'd have to double check and see. But he does a commentary with that, which is great. But any of the Mission Impossible commentaries with especially Fallout with Tom Cruise and Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah.
Those are just unbelievable. And again, that's like another piece that probably like a year ago is what really got me interested again around COVID, watching more movies, and for whatever reason, rewatched all of the Mission movies with my wife. And then found my way into, other movie podcasts. And there's one, I think it's called the Empire Film Podcast. And they've got like lengthy interviews with Chris McQuarrie, where he's talking about writing on writing and directing Rogue Nation, writing, directing Fallout, writing on MI4, but getting into the kind of nitty gritty with him and Tom Cruise about how they're shooting certain sequences, how they're basically writing the movie to support the locations that they're shooting, and right. the action set pieces that they're doing. They're basically just like writing the story to fit within these locations that'll let Tom Cruise fly a helicopter.
Right.
Which is just incredible because you're watching the movie and you're just like, oh, well, yeah, naturally they would go to Kashmir and Tom Cruise would have to jump and fly on the helicopter and get the nuclear device or whatever. That just all makes sense when you're watching the movie. But then you're like, yeah, we basically had to like figure out how to shoehorn that in. It's like,
right.
That just, again,
it's like it they have
brought out all.
They have a bunch of action sequences that they're like, we don't have a movie yet. We just want to make him do this, jump off a cliff, ride on the side of a plane.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
We'll make a movie around that. Okay.
Right. We're shooting at the Burj Khalifa, and we need him to scale the outside of the building, and we're going to be shooting it in IMAX. And why is he there? What's he doing? Why does he need to go on the outside of the building?
I don't know.
And it's like, oh, we'll figure it out.
We'll get to that later. Details.
Right. But just like, that's again, one of those like movie making things that, again, you just kind of take for granted when you're watching a great movie. And listening to him talk about that at length is just so interesting.
Isn't it the next one coming up that he's in space? It's the first movie shot in space.
I don't know if it's that one, if it's Dead Reckoning part one or part two. It could be part two.
I've
tried to, it's hard because like I want to see all of the leaks and spoilers and the stories being written or whatever, and then obviously the trailer for Dead Reckoning I watched 20 times even before going to seeing it in IMAX for Top Gun, which was great. I'm so stoked for that movie next year. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard much about the space piece, but in all likelihood, I don't see why they wouldn't do that. It's like they need to one up every single stunt he ever does. So I could see them doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did hear that, like you said, I don't know which part one or part two, but I heard that he was supposed to be the first one in space filming a movie.
Would not surprise me.
Right. And with everything you're saying, that sounds like exactly like what he would do too. Like,
right. Look, exactly.
I want to shoot a scene in space. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's write a movie around that. It's not like you're writing and be like, it'd be really cool if this character went to space. No. It was in reverse. We've already got the character in space. How do we get him there and why?
Right.
Which six of one, half a dozen the other, that's storytelling. Right. You have an idea and that's what you want to do. Whatever gets it off the ground, pun intended.
Right. Well, I mean, when you have an actor like him and a crew and a writer and director and, you know, whole kind of creative team dedicated to doing things that are, you know, pushing the boundaries of what's safe and what you've ever seen in a movie, where it's like, you know, watching Skyfall, which is one of my favorite Bond movies.
Yeah.
Whenever Daniel Craig's riding the motorcycle on the top of the bazaar or whatever, you know it's not him because they you know there's like a weird kind of cut and you can see his face is kind of superimposed on whoever's driving the motorcycle. And it's like, but whenever you're watching, you know, Fallout, and you see that's Tom Cruise hanging off of the helicopter, flying the helicopter, all of this stuff. Like they go jumping out of doing the Halo jump, which is one of my favorite scenes. They go through such great lengths to make sure, and even in Top Gun too, obviously they did that for every actor. They go through great lengths to know that, so that the audience knows this person, this actor is really doing all of this. And it, again, it just gives you greater appreciation for the crew and everybody involved in making that happen and doing it safely and just giving the audience something that they hardly ever see, which is an actor or a performer being in real danger and doing things that no one's ever done before on film.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, getting to Top Gun Maverick and that, I got chills in the theater both times when Tom Cruise spoke to you before the movie, right? And
right.
Just being like, hey, thanks for coming out because
yeah.
we did this for you. And it's like, and they do it for, I mean, for our money, but they're, mm-hmm. and like we were saying earlier about streaming services and everything, everybody's trying to do something to continually keep us engaged. Right.
Right.
Well, for actors like a Tom Cruise, he's trying to up the game and
sure.
And by people pushing the boundaries like that, it makes other artists push the boundaries as well. And now he's got, I mean, imagine what it was like to be part of that cast, be one of those pilots.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, I'm going to be in a Tom Cruise. So I have to do what Tom Cruise is doing. And
right.
that movie, to me, watching that movie, I felt like all of those actors were like, just like they were, their characters were in the movie. Right. Like,
sure.
They doubted him at first and they're like, can you, but then you probably get on set and be like, all right, well, how much does he really do? Right. When they got,
right.
got the roles. Right. And then sure. You're on set and you're seeing Tom Cruise do these things and they're like, we can't do that. And just like mm-hmm. the characters in the movie, like, holy crap, look at what he right. just did.
Yeah.
I feel like that went on in real life on set.
Oh, like I'm sure just even so modestly, like, him riding his motorcycle or whatever, like everybody knows Tom Cruise can drive a motorcycle. He does yeah. it in like every movie, but it's like, that's one of those things again, that you take for granted that like, oh, well, doesn't every actor drive a motorcycle 70 miles an hour in every movie that they're in?
Yeah.
But then obviously they see that and that's like completely modest compared to what they actually end up doing in being in the cockpit and getting up in the planes. And, I just saw, Maverick, on Tuesday last week. Monday night we watched the original Top Gun, which is my first time seeing it ever.
Yeah. Really?
And yeah.
Oh my God.
I've never seen it before. So I was like, I'm wow. Cause they took it out of IMAX this week, to make room for the Jurassic Park and the Lightyear movie. I'm sure they'll bring it back. I think it's probably going to be doing too good a business to stay out, but I was like, I need to go. I want to see it in IMAX. So I booked my ticket for Tuesday. And I was like, I need to watch the original, obviously. So Monday night, we're like, okay, let's watch the original. And they didn't have the Tom Cruise like pre-movie thing. I'll have to look that up and see if it's on YouTube. They had, and the theater was still pretty packed too. I mean, this was, which was incredible, which you don't really see a whole lot of once a movie's been out for a bit. But whenever Nicole Kidman came up for the AMC thing, everybody was cheering and that was really fun.
Oh, that's okay. You saw that in an I haven't yeah. seen that yet. I haven't been in an AMC theater.
Yeah.
I've
yeah,
seen exactly. that. I haven't seen it in a theater. I've seen what she did though.
right. Yeah. So I didn't see the Tom Cruise one, but I saw that. But then, yeah, watching the movie, I thought it was like equal parts, you know, light nostalgia for the original movie, and I had very good recency of seeing yeah. the first one, but it wasn't too heavy handed. I mean, too many movies try and like force and shoehorn things in. I thought that they did that pretty delicately, but then like the third act was just like a pure Mission Impossible movie, I thought, which was
yeah.
great.
Yeah. So, yeah, it really was.
It really, really was an awesome movie. I'm sure I'll go see it again. Even if it's not an IMAX, I'd still go see it again in theater.
Yeah. I pre-ordered it on Kaleidoscape, and every day I check when's it coming.
Yeah.
When's it coming out? Is it coming out soon? Is it coming out soon?
Right. I saw that. Now, this is actually a Kaleidoscape question, because I'm sure this would happen on iTunes because I can pre-order it there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just says HD and maybe 5.1 audio. I would imagine that would come out in Dolby Vision or whatever. But if you pre-order it at whatever price on Kaleidoscape, and then it ultimately is released in Dolby, would you have to pay for like an upgrade, or no? It'll just, you'll get it at whatever it comes out at.
No, I've actually answered that question a couple of times from people on Twitter. They're like, okay, I don't want to buy it because they're saying it's only in 5.1
right.
and I want Atmos. And what happens is at Kaleidoscape, and talking to some people that I know now that, you know, people have heard me and they're like, oh, anything you need. Brett's right. one of them, mm-hmm. who used to work there, and he still does work. Brett Bjorkqvist's been on my podcast when he was first sure. on. He actually worked for Kaleidoscape, and now he's on his own and he works with Kaleidoscape. But anyways, so what happens is they get the file in and they just say, okay, we have it, we can pre-order it, you can pre-order it, but then they go through it and it's like, you're going to get like the Atmos or whatever. And the, you know, they don't do Dolby Vision and Kaleidoscape, but you're going to get the 4K, you're going to get this and whatever. And if you're buying the 4K version, that's what you're going to get. And you're going to get the top tier, whatever sound that,
that's available.
Yeah. And all of the first, the newer movies, they're all coming with the, you know, the highest quality sound, you know, the Atmos,
HDR and Atmos,
all of that. It's the older movies that they don't necessarily get right away, you know, but just like any of the other ones, but any of the catalog titles like that are coming out recently, like, we've had Lawrence of Arabia for a while, but that's just coming out, on its own, as a standalone, as opposed to being with the box set. Well, when that got released by the studio, it was released singularly on Kaleidoscape in the same form, in the 4K with the, you know, so instead of, you didn't have to buy the box set.
But if you owned it originally, let's say you bought Lawrence of Arabia and it came out in whatever, just standard HD. Now that it's being re-released in 4K or HDR or something, do you have to buy it again or do you have to pay an upgrade?
You have to pay an upgrade charge. You pay an upgrade charge. It's not a free upgrade like iTunes is.
Right.
You have to pay, it's like $4, $6, depends on the studio. It's not bad. Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
But to be fair, it's like, I think the upgrade charge is literally the difference in the price had you bought it in the first place. Okay. You know what I mean? Like if you buy, if you buy something in HD, it's sometimes it's cheaper. So you'll buy it at this price in HD, but the 4K with Atmos is this price. When they upgrade it, you just get a little bit of an upcharge.
You just pay the difference.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, and again, when you're talking Kaleidoscape, it's talking money is foolish. It's you're not saving money. You're not doing it. It's just like, that's not, I mean, that the biggest downside of Kaleidoscape is how much money it is. So if that's all you're going to talk about and say, well, it's too expensive. Yep. End of story.
Right.
It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, for sure. And it, and that was, I think, maybe one of the questions that I'd asked you, maybe even in my original email, or that I wanted to ask about, is at what point would a Kaleidoscape investment make sense? Is it really only sensible if you've got
never
like a 4K projector and like a theater with a 100-inch screen? Is that really the only instance where it actually makes sense, where you could actually see the difference on that large of a screen?
So in terms, anybody from Kaleidoscape that would ever hear this is going to be mad at me. They never make sense. It doesn't, because dollars and cents, it doesn't make sense. Okay.
Right.
You do it for the pure love and the next step in the evolution. Okay.
Sure.
To your point, of like, now where do I start seeing the difference? I would probably say that OLEDs on down, you're going to see a good difference. Okay. And projectors 100 inch and up with a video processor, you're going to see a difference. And you'll notice the difference. And the reason I say that is because what an OLED, like, everybody talks about like Dolby Vision, and one of the downsides of Kaleidoscape is it doesn't have Dolby Vision. But the reason it doesn't have Dolby Vision is like 90% of their systems go on to projector systems, and projectors don't run Dolby Vision. So what's the point? But all Dolby Vision is a map for the display to be able to hit all of those points that it needs to hit the brightness and, you know, basically Dolby Vision is a version of tone, you know, frame by frame tone mapping, right? For the masses. So now, and it's fantastic. It's telling your television everything it needs to know so that it can replicate that image perfectly frame by frame. Okay. A good video processor is doing the exact same thing. So, for all intents and purposes, if you have a good video processor in your system, you're getting Dolby Vision or equal to or better than sometimes on everything. whether it has Dolby Vision or not, you're getting all of that, right? So that's where you're going to be able to tell the difference. You're going to see colors that maybe you couldn't see on other, but they're minor differences. So to say that it makes sense, I can never ever say that this is, oh, you need to get this. No, I would never say that. You're doing it for the pure love of, hey, I absolutely enjoy, I mean, I've done it my whole life. We went through all the steps, right? Six steps I'm at right now between, you know, VHS and today. I love doing those comparisons. I've always done that. And Kaleidoscape is just that next step. So if that's something you love to do, that's a reason, okay? If you just love to have everything at your fingertips and watch, like you were saying earlier, you watch a scene here and you watch some movies, that's a reason. If you have enough money that this doesn't matter, the money doesn't matter, that's a reason, because it's super simple. And that's why most people get it. It's usually, this is for somebody that's like, they've got so much money, they just want to have a simple system
and have convenience and know that you're getting
right
the best.
And the money doesn't matter to them. Right.
Right.
So then it totally makes sense for them. Because it's like, hey, it's easier. It's actually easier than iTunes. It's slicker than iTunes. It's nice. And it's like, it's all in one. Boom, bang, done. But the money didn't matter. But if the money matters, it never, ever makes sense. And you can, spell that word however you want. S or C-E-N-T. Or, you know, it just doesn't. And I've said that on the podcast. I'm like, I don't recommend this for people because it's super expensive. And if it went kaputs, I'd feel horrible if somebody spent thousands of dollars and be like, DJ said it was great. Well, it is. It's great for me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And again, it's probably, it's one of those things where, if you're spending, if you're investing in creating a whole new home theater and you don't have tons and tons, odds are if you're doing that, you probably do have a lot of physical media or other things, but like if you don't have a big library in iTunes or somewhere else, you know, maybe you're like, okay, well, I've got this great theater. Maybe I'm going to start building my collection with Kaleidoscape, as opposed to someone like me who's got, you know, a couple hundred movies in iTunes. Will I, if I ever got a theater, would I need to change the, you know, swap out my 4K Apple TV and all of the content I've bought there and upgrade it and buy it again? Who knows? You know, it's one of those things where that's why I was curious again, like at what level does it make sense for someone to like even look at that or like consider it? Certainly for someone like me who's got a 55-inch OLED, I don't think I'd see much difference between, you know, Dolby Vision on iTunes versus you know, 4K HDR or whatever on Kaleidoscape on my TV.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so either. I just told my wife today, I want to get the new, the new Sony, what is it? The A80J? The K just came out, right? Is that what it is? Sony A80K?
I think so. That sounds about right.
Right?
Right.
I want to get the J. To have an OLED in my house. I want to have that. And then be able to go back and forth, I'd have to run upstairs, you know, but be able to see the difference and actually have an OLED in the house. I've experienced the OLED, just not in my house where I can actually do AB. They're beautiful. They are. But
it's really great.
I would say for you, I would continue, and I've said this to other people as well, I would continue, my recommendation would be keep building your library through iTunes. And I would bet that iTunes someday will get to the point and maybe even surpass physical media, because they're getting so close to physical media now, that the quality, that I already have zero hesitation telling people to be like, don't even do physical media, because iTunes is that close that if you AB it in your home, you'll see a slight difference, but live with that, right? What's going to happen is, because they're upgrading it for free for you, I would definitely just be like, just keep buying iTunes, build that library, and then that's going to grow in quality as you grow, you know what I mean, as you grow in quality. So I just I wouldn't even recommend going out and starting a physical media collection, you know, because that,
right.
Because I feel like that's more finite than iTunes is. Or,
sure.
Or
yeah, exactly. And absolutely. And everything that, in terms of what Apple requires for studios to send them, the ProRes and all that, like the requirements and the kind of QA and everything that they have, they're definitely taking in the absolute best that they could possibly get or that any studio could deliver.
Yeah.
You know, all the limitations and things like that come down to what they can deliver and put on a device and know that that's going to work with streaming capacity in the average home. So really, as bandwidth and things like that are improving, you know, they keep putting out the spatial audio and the Dolby Atmos and the headphones and stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, I even do that too with my AirPods, you know, watching, using the Dolby Vision there Dolby Atmos there. And it's not the same as sitting in a theater and getting it truly from above you, but it does sound great. So
yeah,
it's sometimes I have to do that. I can't just like crank the, you know, the Bose and the subwoofer and, you know, be super loud. I've got, you know, neighbors below me, my landlord's below me and, everything like that. So sometimes it's, you know, that's what you have to do.
Yeah. So actually we haven't even touched on that. Let's talk about your what you're using for a theater.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've got a Sony, I think it's an 8AG, OLED. It's 55 inch, I mean, I'm only, again, in my living room, I'm only sitting about 7 or 8 feet away from it. Nice. So that's anything bigger might be a little too much. And then yeah, exactly. I probably could have squeezed in maybe a 65.
Yeah.
Again, it's like, would we rather get a 55 of a better TV or a 65 right. of a lesser TV? So I got that. I think September of 2019. I remember because it was the first day of football season. I'm a Steelers fan, opening day against the Patriots. I'm like, we're getting a new TV. I want it to be ready for football season. I think we lost like 33-3 or something like that to the Patriots. So
sorry.
I thought you'd enjoy that tidbit, but that's I'll always remember when I got that TV because it was the first day of football season. It was like the most demoralizing start of the football season.
It's demoralizing, but the whole time you're like, the grass is so green.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It looked great, but it was very demoralizing from a game.
You know what's amazing about that? Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
When you watch on TV how they produce those NFL games, it's pure eye candy.
They blow
out the vibrancy on that. The helmets are glistening and the colors are popping and the grass is green. Then you go to a game and you're like, that grass is so blah. It's like, I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Can I ramp up the vibrancy in my eyes? Because like you start to see like how like blah the grass is. And you're like, I swear to God, like, you know, now this is a complete speculation on my part, but I wouldn't put it past the NFL and their, you know, cultivating their image. You know, when you mow your lawn and like when you mow one way, if you look at it, like say you walk in a direction with the mower and the grass lays down in a direct and it looks a little bit whiter. But then when you go to the other side and you look at it where like you were walking towards you, now the grass's blades are all facing you. It's a deeper green.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they like, we need to push most of this grass towards where the cameras are so that we get that brighter color, that more vibrant color.
Right. I mean, they do it like when they mow the outfield for you know, baseball diamond, something like that. You know, they do patterns. The same, and they do different designs and things like that to be fun and and that. So, oh, absolutely. Yeah. They've got to be conscious of, where the primary camera is, you know, for the game and, you know, try and make sure it looks as good as possible.
Which is insane. I mean, the fact that I know that they've done, you see different stadiums, they mow in different directions every 10 yards so that you see that looks nice, but it definitely is. They're just blowing that thing out because, I mean, everybody's doing it at home. Most people are doing it at home anyways with their, you know, they've got it set to, you know, vibrant or whatever, or they're blowing out their televisions, but the NFL is actually sending you that signal too. It's all
right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, which is great. That's, I mean, but it actually kind of hurts when you go to the game. You're like, this isn't as nice. I want to be back home.
Yeah, it's not, that's TV. Why people like to watch. That's why people like to watch at home instead of go to the game half the time. Yeah. I like both, but it, I mean, especially when you watch like the Fox games in 4K.
Yeah,
I mean they look unbelievable. So it's hard to beat that.
Hopefully, we're getting more of that soon. But.
Yeah, I really hope so. I feel like and we'll especially whenever DirecTV runs out of their Sunday Ticket contract, I'll be really interested to see whether it's Amazon or Apple or whoever takes it over. Whether they would put out more games in 4K or HDR or things like that. I would hope so.
I would think of a more with an app. I heard that NFL is trying, they may do their own streaming
service. Do their own app.
Which sure. I think yeah. would be incredible. I mean, oh, do you know how much money that would make? And it would just be all to them. And
yeah, it, absolutely. It would do great. And right. the Sunday Ticket app is, I mean, I had to buy it for Steelers games and it's the worst. I mean, you're 15 seconds behind, so I need to like put my phone on Do Not Disturb to make sure my people watching, like people who I know watching at home or watching in real time, don't spoil anything for me. Yeah. But it's, the app constantly cuts out or has issues.
Yeah. It's, I think they could, NFL is such a juggernaut of money making and people.
Right.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's the exact opposite of baseball. Baseball is
right,
162 games. NFL is now exactly. what 17 or whatever, right. and everybody it's and, so and, limited in scope that you're like, I can't wait for the next game.
Right, and they can. That's the thing is like each of those games is however many millions, tens of millions of viewers a game, and so if they can sell each one of those to an Amazon or to a Fox or CBS or whoever and make the most amount of money possible, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But then the DirecTV thing I think will just be super interesting because again it's like do they want to put the investment in and really make their own app and make tons of money or would they rather just take a check from Apple and let them deal with it? I'm more inclined to think that they would take the check, but who knows? Because really trying to build an app and a product for that is super expensive, super labor intensive and. You might take some heat for it or it might not be so smooth. And then you've got to worry about that and all the PR blowback. Otherwise you're just kind of collecting the check at the start of the season or every couple of years and you just let someone else deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good point. So, all right, let's get back to your system.
Yeah. So the other piece, and then I've got 4K Apple TV, which is great. But on the Sony, they have, Android TV. So like whenever we first got it, I had like the HD Apple TV. So a lot of the stuff that I was watching first, like when we got the TV was, just like through the Netflix app on there and whatever. Then the sound is the Bose Cinemate 2, I think is what it's called. It's pretty old, but I got it, a number of years ago. And it's, it had a subwoofer and two Bose speakers and you see them behind me.
Yeah.
Pretty solid for what it is. And I think before that I had, my TV before that was like a Sony 42 inch, HD TV that I probably got in like 2012. So this one that we got in 2019 was like the first 4K and everything like that, which is great. But before I had like a Yamaha, RX V 377 receiver with that TV and a pair of Sony like bookshelves that were like I probably bought in college for like $70 for the pair. and I had like an old I didn't even old before I got the Yamaha, I had like an old, used retro receiver. And that was just purely for hooking up in my room in college and listening to records and things like that. So again, I packed up the Yamaha and the Sonys and they were sitting in my closet for years and years and years. I couldn't sell them. I was putting them on Facebook Marketplace or whatever for $100. No one wanted the whole setup, all the cables, all the wires. Eventually I had a friend who moved to a new apartment and, I forget how exactly, but he needed a stereo of some kind. And I was just like, I'll just give it to you. I'll drive it down and, I'll come over and whenever you're moving in, I'll just give it to you and just so it has a good home. Just again, because I couldn't sell it. No one wanted it. And it was pretty decent for what it was. But, you know, whenever I had the opportunity to get the Bose a number of years ago, just a friend of mine gave it to me. So I'm like, I might as well just have a subwoofer and these two nice sleek speakers and doesn't take up a lot of space and just hook that up through the TV. So again, for what it is, it's great. And it, you know, I use my Apple TV 4K remote, and that's really all I need. Mm. I was able to kind of jerry rig and program it so I could turn on the Bose system on and off using the Apple TV remote. Instead of using like the massive remote that it comes with, I was able to figure that out. So that's the setup currently. And then aside from that, like around the apartment, I've got a bunch of Sonos speakers hooked up. So I've got one in the kitchen, one in the dining room, one to the left of me. It's one of the IKEA bookshelf Sonos speakers. I had a pair of those that were on my desk. And then I just split them up. I put one in our bedroom and one out here, like in the corner. And then I've got a Sonos Connect, which is hooked up to the Bose.
Yep.
And hooked up to a turntable. So I can, run the turntable through the Bose, and also play all over the apartment. Again, do I need, you know, to play around 800, 900 square feet in an apartment? Probably not, but it's just something that's there and that I have. That just helps too, being able to run the Sonos and hook the Sonos up to the boat.
Yeah.
That really helps a lot too. So that's why I got that. But it also is just a perk that it worked with the turntable as well. That's pretty much the setup there. So just for listening to music, or just even, you know, again, if I'm watching a game, if I'm watching a hockey game or a football game or whatever, I can run the audio to the speakers in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And because the kitchen is behind the wall in the dining room. So I can put the audio for the TV or the game or whatever on and run it through the apartment, and all syncs up with the TV, which is really nice. That's kind of the setup as it is right now. And if and when we ever buy a house, that'll be where the decisions come in about where I would want to set up the TV or what kind of space would be available. What kind of prompted my original question about, you know, what the Sonos home theater setup is like. And I've even done more research even in the last couple of weeks about how the ARC works and all of the other speakers and stuff. So that's kind of really what, again, prompted my original question, was just about, you know, this is my setup right now, but I'm not going to upgrade and buy a ton of new equipment and stuff like that if we're going to be moving out of here and buying a house in the next year or so. So that's why I've been kind of reserved and would I choose to, you know, go and buy an upgrade. I'd rather just wait until we're settled somewhere and I can really get a lay of the land for the space and figure out what's going to work, whether that's a, you know, dedicated, AV unit with speakers set up all over the place, and then use like a Sonos Connect and hook that up? Or am I going to be more limited in space and use like a full Sonos surround system and just, you know, plug and play and do it that way? So, who knows what it'll totally amount to, but that's kind of what I've been thinking about.
Yeah. You have a nice setup there through your whole home. You sound like I did. And I think we said that in the email the first time you emailed me. I'm like, you sound like me when I was starting out. It's like, I had a Bose, little Bose system. And then it was like, oh, go to this. And then I basically started, I knew what I wanted to build in a house someday when I knew I wanted to have a dedicated theater someday. Mm-hmm. So I started building, probably 8 years before I even had a house, I started building my system. And then that system was able to be just put right into the house, into my dedicated theater. Mm-hmm. But you have options and stuff. If you end up now, when you build a house or when you get a house, do you want to have, are you hoping you have a dedicated theater, or are you still hoping for a living room system?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, because again, by way of when I started listening to your podcast and getting my way into the HT Tours stuff on YouTube And then now my YouTube is just nothing but like home theater tours from all of these other you know, channels and stuff like that. And listening to the AV guys, and like I've just, again, by way of listening to your show and hearing all the different collaborations and other podcasts, people that you've had on, I've listened to a ton of other things outside of just yours. So, one of the first ones I was watching was, again, I think a video that you mentioned from the Youth Man channel, and it was like the End Game home theater or whatever, that guy who has like that massive theater down in Florida. Yeah. And I'm like watching it, like, oh my God, that's incredible. But obviously I'm not going to like build something like that.
Yeah.
But the more I was watching like the HT tour videos, it was like, oh, this guy's got like a finished basement and it's multi-purpose and he's got kids and, you know, he's just kind of working with what he's got, which is not a bad thing at all. Like the advent of all these different systems and, you know, Sonos stuff and how good the OLEDs are. Like you don't need to just like build out a dedicated room if you can, or if you don't have the space for it. You can do something really great in a finished basement, or in your living room. And so, that's made me, more comfortable about, you know, whatever the future may hold, that I don't need to just like buy a house because it has dedicated space for a theater. I can get something that's, you know, serviceable for what the family needs. And, you know, if it has a nice space, you know, multi-purpose room in the basement that could be used, then even better. So that's probably more what I'd be leaning to is getting like a really nice finished basement that, again, we could, have it be multi-purpose, but also, you know, try and get some speakers in the ceilings and, you know, get surround sound and try and get Atmos and a sub down there. If I could do that, I think I'd be happy. Just to have something that is, again, a good communal space too. Again, if people are coming over to watch a game or something like that, having something that's a little more multi-purpose, but can still, you know, be a good system if you want to watch a movie.
Yeah. 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 That's, it sounds like Mike Schramm's was very popular.
Yeah. Exactly. That was a great episode.
Schramm's. Yeah. Sorry, Mike. Mike's is very popular, but you're right. It's like, it's that multi-purpose part that plays into what everybody seems to like gravitate towards. It's like, it's nice, those dedicated theaters like Steve's or even like Steve's and mine, stuff like that. But that's tough because it's literally dedicated for screening movies. Right.
Right.
And it's like, I'll have my buddies over to watch a football game in there and it's only like four or five of us, which is fine. But it's not conducive to family watching. Like, even in mine, I have a row of two and a row of three. But what I can do is I can, like, when we used to watch when the kids were younger, I'd take one of the front seats and clip it in because they just clip under their theater seats, but they're like kind of almost like a sectional type deal. You clip it in and I'd make a row of four in the prime seating area. So we could do that. But it's still not like Mike's, where it's like, hey, it's very comfortable. You just go down, you hit the button, and like you could send the kids downstairs and you hang out.
Sure.
It's more family oriented. Wait till you see the theater this week. I'm about 80% done with the editing on it. It's an apartment theater.
And oh wow.
And it's not, you're gonna be like, I can't do that in my apartment. It is
Exactly.
It's incredible. It's when you see it, you're going to be like, it's one of those. And that Tommy is the guy that came on and what he did. And he's a juggernaut of inspiration. It's just like I joke when in the recording, I'm like, do you write for inspirational posters? The guy is just great. But he said this one line. I'll tease it here. The video should be out like Wednesday. He goes, how did he put it? I don't want to fail at having fun or something like it's something like that. And I was just like,
sure.
Oh my God. It's like, look, and when you see his theater, it's just like, there are no excuses. And I say that in the podcast. I'm like, do what you want to do. And enjoy it. And that's what he does. And just like in your theater, and I'm not saying yours isn't great and his is better. I'm saying we're all, that's why I was, I put out that podcast, because so many people, it kind of got to me when people were saying like, mine's the best. No, that's bull bleep. I know there's no such thing as the best, because I got news for you. Nobody's is the best, because they're always inventing something to better whatever you have, even if you could afford the best. And I, most of the people that say they have the best is because they're so ignorant of what the best is. They think that's what
they've invested so much time, money, and resources into building it. You know, it just, you need, that's your validation. You know, you want to think that you've done everything you possibly can,
right?
And that it can't get any better. Where, you know, it's, everybody who listens to the show knows you're always going to be chasing something better.
Yeah.
That show you put out last week alluding to that, it's great. Cause again, it's, and you've said this before, you don't know what you don't know, and whatever you're dealing with and whatever you're trying to improve upon in your own house, or your own setup, you know, you'll notice a difference. If I'm changing out my Apple TV from the HD to the 4K version, that's going to support Dolby Vision and everything like that, then yeah, absolutely. That's great. And even if I'm, you know, listening, you know, using the AirPod Pros to listen and hook it up to my Apple TV, which is great in its own way. Even like I've got Bose QC45s, and I prefer using the AirPods over the QC45s because they connect so much better to the Apple TV and they support the Dolby Atmos. And again, it's somewhat limited, but it's, you know, if I'm watching a movie late, or I'm you know, holding my son or something like that, and I don't want the TV blaring, it's super convenient, and it lets me do what I want to do and watch a movie or show and take advantage of what I've got. So I think that's the right way to look at it, is everybody's got their own situation and their own setup, and you know, they just want to learn more about it and see what they can do to incrementally improve until they can, you know, until they retire and they can, you know, go build a dedicated theater down in their basement or something, if that's what they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's funny. I've talked to people that have gone in both directions. They've progressed to the point when they get to retirement that's when they get their full theater. And I've talked to people that they've progressed through their life, and then when they retired, they lost their theater because they moved and they're like, and they were kind of like, I don't know if maybe they were burnt out, or they were like, I'm not going to build another one.
Yeah.
And
I need convenience.
Yeah.
You know, I want convenience. I don't need to have, I can get something that's good enough for what I need in my life. Totally.
Yeah. I don't see myself, I can't wait. I'm either building or buying another house, and I can't wait to put in the next theater. I can't wait to build another theater. It's just, that's the fun. That is fun to me. That's not the fun, but that's a fun part of it too. It's like,
yeah, absolutely.
Taking what I've learned over the years, the mistakes I made building this one, and implementing all the stuff I've learned. There's so much more. And then who knows what the tech will be. Like we said earlier, like, how can you get better than 4K? Oh yeah, 8K, but it's no better.
Right.
But what does HDR do?
Exactly. Yeah. But just your point about, like, you know, looking to see what you can do and what your new space will be. I was even kind of the same way. Like whenever I got a bunch of different Sonos speakers for my apartment, again, I like took a completely unnecessary diagram of what my apartment was to the store. And you know, they were going to tell me what speaker is the best one to buy. They only have three different speakers at the Sonos store. And like the layout of my, you know, apartment isn't, there's only so much you get to cut. You put a one here, a one there. If you want to get a sound bar, you can get a sound bar. But again, just like the process for me of like mapping out, okay, I want to get the Kinect so it can hook up to my turntable and hook up to the Bose. And I'm like showing all these diagrams to the guy at the Sonos store. I'm like, yeah, sure. That looks fine. Like, I don't see any reason why like you need me to like tell you whether that's good or not. But again, just like the process for me of like thinking through all of that and figuring out like where I wanted to put speakers, and then doing all of the TruePlay, you know, mapping or whatever with your phone. I'm like constantly doing that and tweaking it. So if I move the speaker, I have to redo it and all that. And again, it's just like, that's super modest compared to what people are doing with building their theaters and putting their subs in and tweaking things like that. But again, it's like, it's all relative to what's going on and what you're doing and what sort of configuration you're building.
Right. And you, it's so funny. It's like, you're enjoying the ride, right? And it's like, yeah. And when you went to the store, you came prepared. And what you wanted out of that ride was you wanted a tour guide that's going to be as enthusiastic as you are, right? And what you ended up with is the guy that's working at the Grand Canyon but doesn't give a crap about the hole in the ground. And he's like, on your left, big hole. Okay, we're going to pull up here, more big hole. All right. Instead of giving you the, if you look on your left here, that is 4,352 feet down. But up here, it's over a mile or whatever. And somebody with enthusiasm, and you just got, you're like, look at, I drew this thing. This is my apartment. What can I do? And the guy goes, these two. Great. You're going to be good.
Right, exactly.
It's like, no, I want some engagement. I want to have some fun, you know. And you know how much more you would have bought if he had just said, oh, well, all you really need is this. But if you did this and this, and oh, I've experienced this, this, and this, and you would have been like, I want to experience that too. And you come home with, what did I buy? I don't know.
Exactly. Like, I already knew enough about it to know that the Play 5, which is massive, like that, I don't need that. I don't have space sonically for something like that. The only thing that I would have considered would be like, okay, maybe I'll swap out the Bose and get the Sonos sub and get a couple of speakers on stands or get the soundbar or whatever. But again, it's like, I'm going to wait by the time it makes sense to invest in that, there'll probably be another generation or two further out. So I'm like, I might as well just wait and just get whatever it's going to come out a year from now, rather than, you know, try and cram all this new tech into an apartment and make it better or spend more money. I can get the Kinect module and hook it up to the turntable and hook it up to the Bose, and it'll do what it needs to do. And I don't need to buy a new sub and two new speakers to do that.
No, I have the I have Sonos all through my house. I have the Kinect. That's how it runs outside in my backyard. I have a bunch of outdoor speakers out there. And I love it. I have a bar. I can't remember which bar I have in my bedroom. I have that. I have a Beam and two ones in my living room. And the ones are set up as surround speakers. And I think that's a pretty good environment for a home theater. For a living room system, and they're kind of wonky set up. It's not my room's on the diagonal. The TV's in a corner, so it's not like a regular square. So the surrounds are like really far away. But when you run that auto tune system, it kind of pulls them in for you, the sound wise.
Exactly. And I think some of the ones, maybe the newer ones that actually have the mics in them, I think they actually do the auto tune or whatever calibration, at least the Rome does, the small portable one.
Yep.
I think it does that automatically. If you have the mic turned on, it'll do it automatically based on where, because you're moving it around so much.
Right.
So even that's great. It's just, you know, you never know. And the more research I did on like the Arc and the Beam and stuff about the Atmos capability is that basically if you did do that, it wouldn't make any sense trying to pair that with, like, they have their architectural speakers, right? They have like Sonos speakers you can put in your ceiling. And I was thinking, I'm like, oh, I could get the Arc and then get the sub and two rears and then put stuff in use their architectural speakers to put in the ceiling. But those aren't Atmos supported. Basically, the Atmos that you're getting is from the upfiring on the Arc, which again is something that I didn't really know, or I would have assumed. I was like, oh, if you the Arc supports Atmos, so if you get the rest of your system hooked up, I'm sure that does too. But again, just through reading up and watching videos and forums and stuff, the Atmos explicitly is coming from the Arc, from the upfire, not from any other speaker. So it'd be pointless to be like, oh, I want to get a true Atmos system and use the whole Sonos config. Doesn't really make sense, at least in this point. Maybe in the future they'll do some software updates to make it so that you can use the in ceiling, but again, so that like factors more into the decision with what I do. You know, if I do get a good basement or a good dedicated space, I'd probably just, you know, run something separately with a good Denon or Yamaha or something, and if I can get speakers in the ceilings, just do that whole setup independent, and then hook up a Kinect to it if I wanted to run the rest of the system through. So again, that's just all part of the fun of like research and trying to envision, like you said, and when you're looking for new houses, envisioning the space you have and what you have to work with. I do the same thing. Like if I'm, if I'm at my brother's place or I'm at, if we're looking at houses online or whatever, I'm just like constantly running that through my brain, which is really fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For years and years, that's what I do. And I said it recently in a podcast. Now I'm doing it as I drive by houses. I'm like, what could I put in there? I can't even see inside. Right. I'm just
like, I wonder what the basement,
what's the basement layout look like? You know? I can picture. Yeah.
And yeah, exactly.
I've installed a couple of Arc systems, and I've experienced the Arc system, with, an Arc, a sub, and two rears. So yeah. One's set up for the rear, and it is really nice. It is really nice. Yeah. If you're going from not having that to like, say your system to the Arc system, you would be like, holy crap. There are sounds coming from places. If you're in a symmetrical room anyways, cause that's where I did it. And, I set one up in a room that was basically could be considered a dedicated room. It was their living room, but it was a long, longer than it was wide. So, and that's how they had it set up. I think they had like a 75 inch television at the front. They put the sub in the corner. I mounted the rears and put the Arc in, and it was funny. The gentleman, him and his wife were sitting there, and she loved it. She's like, this sounds great. And he's flipping the channels and he's like watching TV, and this literally just all plugged in. I was showing him how to use the app and everything.
Yeah.
And he goes, I can't hear anything in the back. Now he's an older guy, and I'm like, well, you're watching golf.
Right.
What do you want? Birds?
The birds and the wind blowing. And,
yeah, I'm a fairly sarcastic guy, and sometimes that stuff comes out when I'm like, I'm comfortable. I'm in your home. I'm doing this stuff, right? kind of a friend of a friend type deal. I was like, what do you want? I was like, which is
probably not the best.
Yeah, I was treating him like a friend, right? When I should have been like, oh, okay. So what I did is I go, what do you have for movies? And they happen to have Endgame on iTunes. I go, well, let's do this. And I grab the thing, I slide it forward to the battle scene at the end.
Right.
Oh my God. They were like, wow, they're looking, they're whipping their head around. I'm like, stuff flying. The hammer went from one side of the room to the other, and they're getting all the sights, the sounds, and the scene, right? And they're like, wow, that was awesome. And I'm like, yeah, like, it's a little different than golf.
Yeah, you have to pick the right demo stuff and figure out what's going to make sense. Like, not everything is going to need two rears.
No.
If you're watching, depending on what you're watching, it's.
And what I said, and I recommended, I'm like, when you're watching regular TV, set it on, I can't remember what they call it on Sonos,
but like where voice enhancement or something like that.
Where it brings it down. Like if you're not watching a movie, it's real easy on the app. I could probably open my app up and see it right now, but where it makes everything level, because what you'll notice, especially with a Sonos system, a full system like that, when you go to commercial, it's like they hit everything. It's like, wake up. We're selling dentures. Yeah. Wake up, everybody. It's like the whole room kind of like
exactly. So it'll kind of neutralize.
Yeah. It levels it out. So like, if you're just watching regular TV, put this on, because when you go to commercial, you're going to be like, wow.
It's going to be crazy.
Right. But make sure that when you put a movie on, and I demonstrated it for him, I go, you want to turn this off. Turn off the voice enhancement, because you don't want that on when you're watching a movie, because it should be, you don't want to be amplifying
equally calibrated.
Right. You want everything to be this way. So, they're great systems and simple to use and great to utilize around the home,
The
Sonos is just so plug and play. It's like I said, I put a system into the bar up to, the restaurant uptown. They're great systems. But then when you go from that, I listened to the Arc system and it sounded so good that I was like, man, is this as good as what I, and then you go home and go, oh wait, no. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it is
that
good.
It's all relative.
Right. But it is that good that you're like, why I could see why somebody with an arc system would come to my house and be like, why would you do all this when mine's just as good? I could totally rationalize that in my head because it is that good. You're getting a great experience. But if you sit into like a dedicated room like mine and you'd be like, experience that over and over, you'll hear the difference when you go to the arc. You'll be like, oh, okay, I'm missing a few things here. But it's the arc system, so overwhelming. And it's there's so much stuff that there's enough there to keep you entertained all the time. And just like your system now, it's like you're running two channels and you're enjoying that. And you're like, oh, wow. And you're getting everything you can in that. I don't know if I would go with a sub in your house, in your apartment right now, because that's just going to bother neighbors. That's going to give you something that you're going to want to turn up, which is going to hurt. Right. You because now you're not going to be able to.
Yeah, exactly. I've got some like some padding, like some cushion underneath it, because I had that from whenever I had my Sony bookshelves. I did that. I have like some like foam, it's like what you would use and like with like really heavy duty monitors, you'd put these like foam inserts underneath it. But so I put that rather than the sub sitting on top of the hardwood. That's what like it's resting on so that it can be, you know, somewhat minimal and not cranked up too much. But yeah, you're probably right that like by the account of the space, it might be kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
And cause more harm than good.
Yeah. And like you said, you're sitting, what'd you say? Like 6-7 feet away,
seven, eight feet. Yeah.
7-8 feet away. You got two channels. You're right there. I mean, 7-8 feet away from a 55 inch, two channels. Right. I would not be surprised if you were getting sitting there.
Yeah. I mean, you can kind of see.
Oh like, yeah. No, I see.
That's the distance, you know?
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if you're getting
the sub is right in the back there.
Yeah. A good, you might be getting a pretty good 5.1. Obviously go into a dedicated 5.1. You would hear a difference. But you're probably getting a really good experience with the two channels because you're getting you're getting that phantom center. You're getting, I'm sure you're hearing stuff move around and you're getting, obviously you're getting pans across the front, but you're getting a great experience there. That is and obviously you're doing your research and you can't wait for more, which same here. I'm in the same boat as you are and look at the differences, you know, and that's what it's all about. That's the fun.
Yeah. Again, it's all relative to what you're doing. And, and again, if I was deciding that, okay, the space where my primary moving watching would be in like a living room, like on the main floor of the house. Like if I want to reduce wires and clutter and things like that, I'd probably just get like the arc set up. Because I don't want to have a rack or I don't want to have more equipment in there. I want to keep it kind of minimal. But again, then if I'm down in the basement versus if I'm down in the basement and I've got, ceiling speakers and stuff like that, again, it's all relative to what your space allows for and what makes sense. So that's what's fun about it is knowing what your options are and trying to figure out how to create the best sort of system that's, suitable for the space.
The best environment. For what you want to enjoy. Exactly. And I mean, clearly you have a passion for these movies, obviously. That's the other thing. You have a young, what is it? Your son?
Right
there in the background. I see his little head on the camera. on the floor. But when my kids were younger like that, I love doing audio commentaries. I want to do more of them. I can't do them as much as I used to. I literally just don't have the time. But I did do like, that's what I liked about, that's why I knew about the Batman and having Matt Reeves on there. It's like, I can go upstairs and put it on
iTunes listen to it.
And just listen to it while I'm in bed at night. And it's, it took me like 2 or 3 nights to watch the entire thing. Cause you doze off and then it would play through and they'd be like, all right, I heard this, start again right here. But at that age, with your son that age, that young, it's like you've got a lot of time where he's not really doing anything.
Sitting around.
I don't want to crank a movie, but hey, I'll do this. And you learn so much. You learn so much about the movies, about movie making, and I mean, that's what I loved about Laserdisc when my kids were younger. That had audio commentary that you couldn't get with VHS. And
right.
I learned so much. And then it does become tedious after a little while that, you know, you don't, I would like to get back into it because the technologies have changed. So there is more, but once you've done enough, like you do that for a few years and then your son will be older. He'll be probably into sports or doing some things. So now you won't have the time, but you'll be like, huh, you'll go to watch one and be like, oh, he's just saying the same thing everybody else is, you know what I mean? And it's like, it gets a little tedious at times, but there is, I love the creative process and how they do it.
Oh yeah. I mean, and again, that's what's so great about like the AirPod Pro. Again, super easy to take out of my pocket. And, you know, if I'm holding them, I can, you know, put in a podcast. And again, like from the last year and a half, you know, listening to shows like yours or the Rewatchables I mentioned, which I love. The Big Picture is another one on the Ringer Network. And then Empire Film Podcast, Light the Fuse is a great, like Mission Impossible podcast.
Yep.
Again, like these shows where they get on, you know, get on Christopher McQuarrie, or they get Michael Mann to come on and talk about Heat, or they talk to Quentin Tarantino about his movies, whatever. Like those are all, and they're like 3 hours long. It's like, these are great. It's like what's another kind of complimentary piece to the film commentaries, which are just great in their own way. But it's really so much fun.
Yeah. And I see, that's the thing is I think it's so interesting that, I mean, we have audio commentaries, you have extra, all those different extras, and now there's dedicated podcasts to movies. And it's like, people say, like, people question, like, are movies going away? Or is that, I'm like, it might not be as popular, but I feel like this part of it is actually growing. Like, the small niche that we are in home theater, I think that's grown. It's never going to be huge. It's still going to be a very small percentage, but I feel like more people are, you know, we're finding more and more people. Even how long have you really been into this for yourself?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, again, like I always, growing up, like loved watching and rewatching movies on cable. And I was really big into concert films, music documentaries, The Last Waltz and the, you know, the classic album series, and on MTV and stuff like that. And so I was really big into all of that and always been like a huge Bond fan. So like I'd go and we'd watch the Bond-a-thon on TV or go to the library and rent Bond VHS or whatever. But yeah, just like once I got my 4K TV, and then COVID hit and it's like, okay, this movie, they remade Emma or whatever. And it was like right in the start of COVID and my wife wanted to watch that. And so it's like, okay, let's rent it and watch it and, you know, watch it in 4K or whatever. And the more time that we've spent at home, like during COVID and again, having a great TV and again, having all these movies, like again, just movies I've had in my catalog and then going in, and looking them up or seeing them in the store again and being like, oh, like The Social Network is in 4K now. I should rewatch that and see it in 4K or, you know, whatever Lawrence of Arabia is up in 4K or something, Citizen Kane, like, or Chinatown, all of these old movies that are like I had, and I'd maybe watched once or twice, in something like The Social Network, which is one of my favorite movies, has a great, I think they have a commentary, but it's maybe only on the disc. Cause I don't think I've heard that. But yeah, so just like, again, realizing that, if you can't go out to the movie theater, which we love, my wife and I love to do, and I've gone out, I obviously saw Top Gun. We have an Alamo Draft House, in Brooklyn, that we love to go to. So we went there to see, like Get Out and Us, the Jordan Peele movies. I think we saw Solo, the Star Wars movie there. And so that would be like our default, unless we were seeing like Fallout, we went to see an IMAX just for obvious reasons. But for most movies, we would go there and we really like the Alamo Draft House. And, I went there recently with a buddy of mine and we saw X which is a horror movie. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that yet.
That just came out. Oh, it's incredible. I mean, it was a really fun, like, in-person theater movie, just because it was a packed house, super fun, scary movie, like good callback to kind of 70s grindhouse horror movies. Mm-hmm. But really great, entertaining, funny, scary movie. Highly recommend it. Again, just kind of circling back, like realizing what great stuff you can watch in 4K or Dolby Vision or whatever, even on Netflix or on iTunes, but also still, when the time is right, you know, figure out when is a good time to go to a theater to see a movie. That's all just stuff that, again, probably since COVID, I've always loved movies, always loved TV and stuff like that. But Spending more time and listening to these other podcasts just gets me more kind of invested in the art form and the creative people and the crew that makes all these things possible, and being able to watch and listen with a new appreciation for what they do. So I think it's one of those things. I've always been a huge fan, like I said, of just movies in general, but now that spending more time and watching at home and appreciating the time that I do am able to get out and go to a theater, it's just been really a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you've obviously clearly have a huge passion for movies, for the theater. Mm-hmm. And it was COVID and 4K that kind of got you to build start your home theater journey.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really, we had the Bose speakers before, but we had, like I said, we had like a 42-inch Sony, which again, for the space, not terrible, but it wasn't 4K. So whenever we got the 4K TV, that's like when it really, we're like, okay, we can watch. I think that was like around whenever Mank came out on Netflix, and that was like a great movie to watch in Dolby Vision on the TV. And just being able to watch and appreciate that was really cool. And just made me appreciate it a lot more. But then even around like, you know, Halloween time, you know, we'll watch all of the Halloween and Friday the 13th and Freddy movies and stuff. Yeah. Cause I grew up like going to Blockbuster, and my friend and I would rent, you know, we'd pick two movies. We'd pick like a Halloween and a Friday the 13th or a Freddy movie and a Pinhead movie or a Child's Play or whatever. And so like, that's my like Blockbuster kind of nostalgia is going and renting those movies, which was a lot of fun. But now like watching with my wife, like she had never seen any of them. And we should like have a marathon. So we'd go through and watch like 8 Friday the 13th movies. And she's like, these are kind of ridiculous, but also I really love it. And especially that time of year, it's really fun to watch those movies, and they're super cheesy and corny. But it's also, again, it's fun, like they've got a great, I think it's called like, there's some sort of Camp Crystal Lakes documentary that's like multiple hours long, where they go through like pretty much every movie and the directors and the writers and the Tom Savinis of the world that are doing the special effects. And again, like watching the behind the scenes of how they get the spear through Kevin Bacon's, you know, chest or whatever, and how they worked that whole contraption and just how innovative that kind of stuff was for the 80s. All of that's really, really fun. So, and then the home theater piece again is like, okay, I'm getting all these movies in 4K now, upgraded for free on iTunes. I can certainly enjoy the visual piece. Mm-hmm. The audio, I'm not getting any Atmos unless I'm putting the AirPods Pro, which again, it's not real Atmos. It's just telling me what Atmos is before I have any of the upper speakers. But it's just, again, it's giving me a reason to go back and rewatch stuff in 4K or HDR or whatever. And again, because I've always loved flipping through and watching movies on TV, jumping into a movie, and especially with the younger son, I can't just sit down and watch a movie for 3 hours. Maybe I'll watch, 20 minutes in the middle of Sicario when they're going over the bridge to Juarez or whatever. Like that's one of my favorite sequences in any movie. Or just like watch, you know, clips here and there or scenes or whatever, which again, is a big part of your show. Watch the opening to The Dark Knight, watch the bank robbery in Heat, or pick any scene coming, Glorious Bastards. What, Heat?
Yeah, the bank robbery scene.
Yeah, exactly. I think they just announced 4K HDR disc. I think that's coming. We re-release on a disc.
Yeah, and what's funny is it's already on the Kaleidoscape, and
right.
So when you get, that's one of the nice things about Kaleidoscape too, is you can go in, they give you scenes too. And that right. one's already yep. on, and you can make your own sure. too. And I've made a few, but, you go on to Heat. And I was like, I think it was, Ralph Potts was actually talking about the disc coming out soon or something. And I was like, oh, I should pull that up. I already had it. So I pull it up on Kaleidoscape and I'm like, let me see if they have that bank robbery scene. And sometimes their scenes are like 30 seconds for a demo scene, just to like show you something. They have the full already stamped out, the full 5 minutes. You just click on the scene and just watch that scene. And it is right. It's awesome.
Right. It's great. Oh yeah, it's incredible.
But what's funny is it, having just seen Ambulance, and I don't mm-hmm. know if you heard me talk about that one.
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm sure I will. There's, I think they just put it on Peacock.
Yeah. But on when you see it, oh, that the bank robbery scene they have in that, it's like, and mm-hmm. I said it, it was Todd and I think talking about it. And I, right. we said, I'm like, it's like Heat on steroids. It's right, insane. Right. It's
Heat done through by Michael Bay.
Yeah. Michael Bay made it. It's yeah. the bass, the how, and then when you watch the Heat gun, the Heat scene, you're like, seems kind of flat compared to Ambulance, right, but it's right. still a great yeah. scene. It's like, I mean, it's incredible sounding. It's incredible looking, but it's
yeah.
with the newer technology that they have now in Ambulance and Michael Bay and all of that. It's like, you're right. like, oh my God. But yeah, Heat's a different level for a different reason.
Right. Yeah. They actually just ran it actually in my neighborhood in Queens. There's the Museum of the Moving Image, which I'm not sure if you've ever been to New York or been there, but it's like a big movie and TV museum, which is incredible. And they have a theater there. Yeah. If you're ever in New York, I highly recommend, you'd love it. We went for like a Breaking Bad exhibit. They had like all sorts of memorabilia and like props from Breaking Bad. They had a huge Scorsese exhibit, which I really loved. It's a great museum, but they also have screenings there. I'd never seen Lawrence of Arabia. Oh. And in the fall last year, I went and they had a 70mm screening of that. So I was like, I've never seen it. I want to see it for the first time. I'm going to go see it in the theater.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. But they just did a run of Michael Mann movies, and they did Heat and Collateral and I think Miami Vice. I didn't get to go and see it because we were just on vacation, but I think for the Tribeca Film Festival, I think they're doing a Heat screening with Michael Mann and De Niro and Pacino. So I might try and go catch that if I can.
That's awesome. That sounds awesome.
But that's super fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Lawrence of Arabia looks fantastic. I don't know if you've seen that on, I don't know if, is that streaming anywhere in 4K? Have you seen?
I don't know. I own it on, that was another one of those ones that, again, I saw it for like $5 on iTunes and it was in 4K and Dolby. Oh, okay. And I was like, sure, why not? I might as well. So I've watched, after I saw it in the theater, I came back and watched some of the clips or scenes from there on. And it looks great. It looks incredible.
It's amazing. It's for a movie that's that old, it's just those are the movies that, there's so much they can do with them too, because they were shot so well, like in the 70mm, that there's no resolution. There's no number on a film like that. So if you have a good version on film, they can pull out an 8K version. They can pull out a 16K version because of the way it's, you know, what it is on film. It's so much. And Lawrence of Arabia looks amazing. Bridge on the River Kwai. I did Psycho. It's in black and white.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It looks so good. It looks so good in black and white with the HDR. And I compared that one. And it's in DTS:X on disc. And it looks and sounds so good.
What is that? Can you actually explain that to me? I truly don't. I don't really know what DTS:X, like how that compares to Atmos or other surround.
Same thing. Okay. It's DTS's version of Atmos. It's there. It's a,
okay. Got
so
it.
What Atmos and DTS:X, they're considered object based sound. Okay. And what that means is So like you have a good example in your, with your theater, is that you have two channels. And if you want to make the sound move from the left to the right, what you do is you pull the volume up on one and you bring it down on the other, and that'll give you, so when you're mixing the track, when you're mixing that scene, if you want to make it sound like the car drives across, you'll have it really loud on the left, and then you'll just gradually switch them like this. You know, you'll bring the levers up and down,
right,
and it'll sound like it panned across, right? So what object-based is, they don't actually manipulate the channels. What they do is they say the sound designer will take it and he'll move the cursor. Like, I want this sound here, this track of this car moving across, and he'll take and he'll track with a cursor across the screen. It's actually not even across the screen. It's actually, he's manipulating it in a box, and the box is the representation of the theater room. Okay. So if he takes that cursor and he moves it from the front left corner to the right rear corner, that sound will now move in the program will say, manipulate these speakers to do this. Okay.
Okay.
So that's why they call it object based, because they're literally moving an object inside of a 3D room.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Makes sense.
So that's, and then on our end, if you have an Atmos enabled receiver, or an object-based receiver, meaning it does Atmos and DTS:X, now on our end, it will take however many speakers you have and manipulate it the way that the designer wanted. So if you could have five speakers, or you could have all the way up to like whatever, it's infinite on different systems. So that's the idea of it.
Right.
But they're all basically capable of all the same thing.
Sure.
You know,
okay. So. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's more technology that's just making it easier for the sound design team. It's making it easier for us to translate it on our end. And I mean, again, in my imagination, I can't even, where do you go from here? Who knows?
Right. Yeah, right? Exactly.
And it's fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be something, you know, you'll put on a headset and you'll be like in the movie or something. I'm sure there'll be something gimmicky or something, you know, productive that comes out. But I think that that's, you know, over the last 30 years, I think that that's what anyone's taught us is.
Yeah.
If there's another way to package and sell it, even if it is better. I mean, there's, I don't think there's any debate that we've come a long way from what you can get for a small amount of money in your own house, compared to what you had 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
There's no debate that it's gotten a lot better. So you know, can't be too mad at them for trying to push the limits of what's available. And especially with the more people that are getting Fios and everything like that, that's really the kind of the barometer is how good everybody's, connections are. That'll kind of dictate what they can start pushing the limits with.
Yeah, exactly. I think where they have the most room to improve our experiences with the HDR. Because when you see a good HDR rendering compared to a poorer one, it, like the good, a really good HDR, it almost looks 3D. And because you feel like, I mean, it's so good that you feel like you can reach around and be like, wow, that's like almost 3D. If they can get there, what's to say they can't advance that to the point where now we have passive 3D, where you don't need glasses. You don't, because people don't like to have to put stuff on, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, because if you have to put stuff on, that means not everybody in the room can experience what you're experiencing. Whereas if you have really good HDR and we're all in the room together and you're looking, they're like, that looks incredible. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I don't need glasses to see that. So I'm hoping that's the direction they go in and to push that. I think the hardest part is going to be the marketing of it. Like, where do we go to HDR Plus? Is that the next one, or HDR?
I think X, so. Is it, that's already a thing, isn't it?
Is HDR it really?
Plus or HDR 10 Plus or something like that. I think isn't that Samsung's
That's
sort of Dolby Vision equivalent.
Right. That's more of the codec to get you the HDR. But what I'm saying is like, So like you have Dolby Vision, which is proprietary to them, but then you have the HDR 10 Plus, which is basically the same thing. It's frame by frame giving you all that info, whereas HDR 10 is just basically, it's like, okay, here's the layout and your television is gonna, it's like, it's not necessarily scene by scene. It's like a map of like, this is your peaks or whatever, you know. Rob H on AV Rant can really break them down, but like HDR 10 Plus and Dolby Vision are identical in their capabilities. Okay. It's the exact same thing, much like DTSX and Atmos. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is their actual rendering on the, like what the cameras are going to be able to capture in the future, like how deep can they go and how much can we reproduce on our end to give us that 3D feel, to give us that. It's not about resolution. It's more about like steps per, you know, of gradation is really what we're looking for. And that's what HDR does.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so interesting too, is like, I was thinking about this when I saw like the new Avatar trailer, right? Mm. And I remember when Avatar first came out and it was like, oh, 3D glasses. And that's like a true like 3D movie theater experience. But then also they were bringing, I think that might have been around when they were bringing 3D glasses into your home for your TVs. And that was something that I never had and I never used. So I don't know how good or how bad it was, but it feels like that has kind of fallen out of fashion a little bit. And it's so funny that like, okay, now, now that Avatar 2 is finally coming out, it seems like the 3D kind of boom has kind of come and gone. And is it going to come back again because James Cameron's like putting out another movie? I mean, it's, and then wait. And then whenever the third movie comes out in another 5 or 10 years, will it loop back again?
Right.
Because that's another thing. I never saw Avatar. I never saw it in the theater. And so once it was out of the theater, I'm like, well, I'm not going to watch it on my TV because it's not, everyone says you have to see it in the theater in 3D. And I'm not going to buy a 3D TV just to watch Avatar. So I'm hoping that whenever it comes out, maybe they'll do another run of the original in theaters and do it in 3D. Who knows? But that's just what's so funny is like the amount of time that it took him to get Avatar 2 coming out. It's like the whole kind of 3D phenomena that was started from Avatar, or not, maybe not started, but certainly had a big moment with Avatar.
Right.
Is now it's going to come back into the forefront, and maybe that'll be something that comes back around again. I don't know.
That's one of my speculations is that I think, I mean, when was the last time James Cameron, well, not all of his movies, but let's just say like most of his movies, he introduces or implements some new technology that revolutionizes movie making, right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's like The Abyss. One of the things about The Abyss was he was doing that with T2 in mind. So
like a trial run.
It really was. It's like, so what they were doing in The Abyss, and this is on a lot of the commentary of The Abyss and on T2 and stuff, where you, if you listen to the two of them, you can pull this stuff out of there. In The Abyss, it's like that blob of water where the aliens were manipulating the water. It was a rudimentary version of the, you know, T-1000. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And it was like, okay, well, we can just make it look like water. Nobody's going to say, well, that's not what water looks like when it's floating by itself in the air. Really? You've seen that? So they were able to do that. But then it took like, you know, another year or so. But in their development, they're like, we can make it look like a person. We can develop. And then that's that technology. You know what I mean? So even Titanic, it like he literally went to the bottom of the ocean on that movie.
Right.
And it was a lot of like what we were talking about earlier with Tom Cruise, right? Like, all right, I want to be on the side of a plane. Let's make a movie where I have to be on the side of a plane. Well, James Cameron was like, I want to go to the bottom of the ocean. What can we do? Hey, how about Titanic? And we'll go check out the Titanic at the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
And he would like, I don't know if he's the one that discovered it or helped fund it, but they literally came right out of Cape Cod to go find it. And it was like, he filmed it and put it in that movie. And that was like, that's groundbreaking what he was doing there. And then of course we go to Avatar where he revolutionizes 3D making. And so I'm hoping that this is where we get a touch of passive 3D in Avatar 2. And one, even the new trailers for that, I think are like, they're so vanilla. And I think that's James Cameron, that's Steven Spielberg, that's movie making at its best, where you'll be like, here's the new Avatar. And everybody goes, okay, well, that's nice. But they're basically showing you everything you had from before. And now they're like, I have a feeling that when you get to the theater and you see it, you're like, people are going to be blown away because they're not expecting a lot, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, they'll hide plenty of it and they'll still make you go. It's same with Top Gun too. Like, there's only so much that they're going to show in the trailer,
right?
Before, and you really have to be in the theater to see what it all amounts to.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why everybody keeps saying you got to go to the theaters and see Top Gun, because it's you're like, you're moving in your seat the way they're moving in the cockpit, and you're like, oh my god. And it's like, and that's why I can't wait to get it at home. It's, I mean, one, I want to have it at home, but I want to have that fresher memory of seeing it in the theater,
right,
and being able to get this
and see how it compares.
Yeah. And it's like, it's so good. So much fun.
Yeah.
So, Peter, this has been amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. DJ, I really appreciate it. I'm glad that we got to do this and, you know, set this up so quickly with, you know, how recent we were talking back and forth. Really, timing worked out great. So really appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks for stepping up. Thanks for coming. I mean, like, you literally just started listening to the podcast and you're like, hey, wait a minute, I can be on?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think it's one of those things where just like, again, when I started listening and kind of piquing my interest and all this stuff, again, it's like, not like I have a theater, I just have a TV. But that's all what your whole show's about is, you know, you just need something to watch and have fun and have a passion for it. And that was so fun. And just, you know, listening to, like I said, listening to the guys that you were talking to before, or your show with Ara, or shows with other kind of guys who have podcasts and shows that I've been kind of consuming a lot the last couple of weeks. You know, it just seemed like a good kind of topic that, again, maybe not a lot of, you might have other listeners who are like me that don't have anything yet and they're just kind of thinking about it, or they're envisioning what it might look like. And just wanted to talk about movies and talk about how cool they are. So that's what was really fun for me. And, you know, I, again, really appreciate it. And, you know, can't tell you how much I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Like I said, when I got your email, you sound just like me. You got the two channels going. You sound like I did 30 years ago. So you got a long way to go. You're enjoying the ride, clearly. You're on the same path I was on. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is where you went. You might not have a podcast, but
we'll check in 5 years from now and we'll see.
Yeah. We'll check in before that, I'm sure.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah. It's been awesome, Peter. Thank you so much. Thank you. It's just been great. And that, like I said, I mean, just start listening and be like, hey, all right, I'll come on. That's awesome. So thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Again, another week where I don't know what I'm doing on Friday, but I'll have something. I'm sure I'll come up with something. And I keep saying this, there's some additions coming to the podcast. It's going to be fun. It's actually going to get more fun, Peter. So can't wait. So
great. Can't wait. I'm excited.
Thanks for listening. And hey, everybody, go push play.
Hey Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.